That movie was just like nothing you'd ever seen before. It's such a violent genre to choose, right? The gangster movie. If you replaced bullets for the splurge in Bugsy Malone, it would be more violent than Michael Cimino's Year of the Dragon.
Splurge appears to be lethal, and I looked up what actually there is in Splurge, and now it makes sense. It contains whipped cream, very sugary, dog shit, Sunny Delight, and anthrax. So that's why that's why it kills you, and that's why they're using it. That's a joke. I wrote that joke.
I actually did love the bike with the feet wheels.
Yeah. Feet wheels? You sure you weren't watching Wacky Races?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Today, we are joined by Joe.
Hello.
Adam.
Hey.
A.K.A. Jimmy Titface is what he's given himself this moniker today. And Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Bugsy Malone.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Adam and Joe. If you would please say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hello, listeners to FlixWatcher. My name's Adam Buxton. I've been on this podcast before, and I am currently a podcasting man. Sometimes think of myself as a comedian and writer, and in the olden days, well, and still, I was one half of award-winning 90s comedy duo Adam and Joe.
Hello, listeners. My name's Joe Cornish. I am the other half of award-winning 90s comedy duo Adam and Joe, and I am now a writer-director-type man of films.
What films have you done, Joe Cornish?
What films have I done?
Yeah.
I did Citizen Kane.
Oh, I love that. Well done.
And Star Wars.
Oh, that's not so good.
Which one?
And all of them. And the okay. 400 Blows.
Boring.
And Derek Jarman's Blue.
Oh, that's like that very one. Good.
And I did Over the Hedge.
That is the best one of the lot. That is an underrated peach. Mm-hmm. Well done.
Thanks, man.
Animation, right?
Well, yes. We shot
that,
it live
was
action,
that
but then we
to
had
animation?
To. Sorry, can I finish, please? We shot it live action, and then we had to draw over it because it wasn't right.
Joe drew every frame of that by hand.
Yeah, we shot it with live action, Bruce Willis and stuff. But just a lot of the clothes were wrong and some of the lines were better. So I just drew over it with squirrels.
Well, you won an Oscar for that one, didn't you? Yeah. Yes,
I did. A lot of Pixar films, that's what happens.
Well, they just throw a squirrel in it.
Well, they intend to make them live action, but then it goes wrong.
They just have to draw all over the frame.
Yeah, they go...
Oh, shit. God, it's happened again.
It's happened again. Listen, we can change what they're saying and the clothes.
Just draw some kind
of object.
Blue and pink furry bubble areas and then it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Guys, it's great for you both to join us on the show. Like Adam said, you've joined us for a couple of episodes before for What's Eating Nina Simone, the Nina Simone documentary and The Squid and the Whale way back when.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was really winging it for Squid and the Whale. I don't think I even...
Did you choose that, Adam?
No. I had seen it. We were doing two episodes back to back. I had seen it, but I hadn't seen it for a long time, and I didn't get a chance to watch it just before we spoke. So if you listen back, it is the sound of a man badly bullshitting.
That is my favourite film.
Well.
Out of all the films with a small boy rubbing his semen against the spines of library books, that's my number. That comes in at number
that's the
one.
Top one.
That's a genre, isn't it, on Netflix, I believe.
There's too many. But that one does it best.
So what are you guys up to at the moment? I mean, Adam, you've got your book out, which was delayed due to lockdown, but the audiobook seems to be doing well.
Audiobook going gangbusters, but no one cares about that in the publishing world. As far as most people are concerned, my book is a dismal failure because it didn't make any charts in its hardback form. But
it's not as far as I'm concerned.
No, exactly. I'm very pleased with it.
Number one bestseller.
It was a great success in the audiobook world, and I can't wait to actually get behind it and go out and read it to people this year. I hope that's going to happen.
I just had an email today saying that you're going to be in doing something in September. Is that...
I hope so. I hope I'm going to resume the tour that was supposed to happen last year around about June or July or something, and then I'll be intermittently visiting the cities of the United Kingdom and having a great, great reading time. And Northern Ireland.
Fingers crossed.
Why don't the publishing people like audiobooks? Because they cost a lot of money. And people
well, they don't cost a lot of money when Buckles does them. I did them all here in my nutty room. And why don't they like audiobooks? Because they're way behind is the answer, I'm sorry to say. They feel as if it's not a serious medium. But myself and Joe, I dare say, like to embrace all kinds of media about 20 years ahead of everyone else. And so it is with audiobooks and me.
I think it's important to say that if you read the book, the hardback, but you haven't listened to the audiobook, there is the special Adam and Joe interview podcast at the end, isn't there?
Yeah, exclusive 1 hour. I mean, it's crazy. What I did was I got the rule book, I tore it up, I threw it in the bin, and then I wrote a new rule book and tore that one up and threw it in the bin. And then we sort of sketched out a new rule book and worked
and
off
then
that.
Then you reinvented the bin.
That's right. And then I made a bin out of rule books, and then I popped the old bin in that bin. Oh. And yeah, it's like Inception.
What are you up to, Joe?
I am currently in what they call soft prep, which is like pre-prep for a Netflix show I'm doing for Netflix UK called Lockwood & Co., based on the books by Jonathan Stroud. And it is a sort of action-adventure ghosty series. So we're just starting casting, and we're deep in writing the scripts. And it's all a little weird at the moment, as you might know, but we're hoping to shoot in the summer, to start shooting in the summer.
Yeah, how's that been for you guys during lockdown? Have you enjoyed... this time off, or downtime, or family time?
Downtime, Abby. I haven't enjoyed it. No, I think it's bad, and I want everything to go back to normal the way it used to be. Like more than a few years ago, though. Like the way it used to be.
Pre-2016.
No, I'm thinking in the 80s. Like if we could have the 80s, but no inequality. Less racism, less homophobia, less of the bad things about the 80s. That would be great.
You could do that because everyone's at home and society feels more controllable on a mass scale than ever before. So you could just issue an edict for fashion and culture just to reset.
That would be great. But I'm worried that there are some people that aren't going to follow it.
I don't know. If Matt Hancock and Patrick Vallance, what's he called? If them people went on telly, Patrick Whitty, Holly Valance went on telly and announced it, everyone would do it. And if they didn't, you could arrest them and fine them and put them in prison.
Yeah, good move. Let's do that.
Political joke.
Well, we are here today to talk about films. And we're talking about Bugsy Malone, which was your combined choice, guys. Can you give us, explain why you chose Bugsy Malone and give us a synopsis, and you have less than a minute for the synopsis.
Oh, good. This is very strict.
We're getting it together. This is, now we're going to go
slightly
tight.
I'm slightly turned on.
You heard it first. Flicks Watcher turned on Joe Cornish.
No, I'm not. But Bugsy Malone is a sort of pastiche of 40s gangster movies. It was made in 1976, directed by Alan Parker. And the key thing to know is that it's the cast is entirely young people aged between probably about 10 and 17, right? And what's the story? It's like a classic gangster pastiche. There's two gangs, one led by Dandy Dan, the other one led by Fat Sam, and they're having a gang war, and entwined in their gang war is the feckless boxing promoter, happy-go-lucky, grifter, suave and handsome. Everybody loves that man, Bugsy Malone. Right, Adam?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just marvelling at your synopsis skills. That was very good.
Well, that's not really the story.
Female interest, that sounds very reductive, but is provided by Jodie Foster as Tallulah, a showgirl who sings in Fat Sam's speakeasy, and she's very glamorous, and she goes out with Fat Sam as well. But the person that Bugsy Malone falls for is a young wannabe starlet called Blousy Brown. Sounds like a loaf of bread, says Bugsy. Well, my name's Blousy Brown. And he says, well, that sounds like a stale loaf of bread. And that's the best line in the film, I think.
Hey, that's not true. It's full of witty one-liners. That was one of the things that impressed me when I rewatched it.
Okay.
So when did you watch this first?
I watched Bugsy Malone first. I must have been about 11. So it must have been around about 1980. And we saw it one weekend at school. I was at a boarding school for precocious little people. And on the weekends in the gym, to stop everyone crying from loneliness and separation trauma, they would project a film on the walls of the gymnasium. And one weekend it was Bugsy Malone. And it was just the most magical thing I could imagine, because it had these children in it. And actually, one of the criticisms that people make of the film is that the acting's not all that. And I think rewatching it, it reminded me that actually maybe that was one of the things that appealed to me about it, because it seemed amateurish. It seemed like they'd filmed a school production. I mean, they'd filmed it really well with great sets and cool guns and cars and stuff and amazing songs. But there was that amateur theatrical tone to it, which made me feel as an 11-year-old, wow, I could be in a film maybe. And it was thrilling.
Helen, when was your first time you watched it?
So the first time I watched Bugsy Malone was on Sunday when I watched it for this podcast. So I've gone my entire adult life and childhood never having seen Bugsy Malone.
I feel this is going to lean into the scorings a bit.
I feel we may have some different vibes going on for this film. So yeah, I don't know how I'd missed it, but
Helen, I can't wait. I need to hear your hot take. Can I guess what your hot take is?
Go on.
You're shocked that anyone would make such a film, and you didn't think the special effects were very good.
I actually did love the bike with the feet wheels. So was that a special effect?
The cars.
Cars,
the feet wheels. You sure you weren't watching Wacky Races?
It's the same principle, isn't it, as Wacky Races?
Extraordinary film for a debut film. I mean, I'm surprised they let him make more after that. But
was that Alan Parker's first film?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also I've now realised it's the only Alan Parker film I've seen as well, so I'm not really doing very well for Alan Parker, who passed away sadly, so he's not going to hear me tell everyone what I think about this film.
That doesn't sound good, does it?
I don't know if it's his best film, but it's certainly the most sort of high concept. Alan Parker, apparently, when he went and did showings and festivals of his films, he would generally leave Bugsy Malone out because he felt that it just didn't sit very well with his other output. It was such an anomaly. But then towards the end of his career, he mellowed out and enjoyed it again.
I remember hearing an interview with him on Radio 4 around the time of the release of this movie. I'm going to contradict, because the quote I'm going to say from him contradicts that. So it must have been further into his career. But he said he made a point of making a completely different style of film every time. And that's always stuck with me, because a lot of modern directors make the same sort of film. You expect the same sort of film from Scorsese or from, you know, James Gunn, or, you know, and often directors have a sort of hallmark, don't they? But he made a completely different type of movie every time, you know?
Threw himself into totally different genres. I like directors like that, and there don't seem to be, you're right, there's not that many of them that I can think of. Maybe there are, but I can't bring them to mind. But Jonathan Demme was like that as well, who just inhabited completely different genres each time and did so with full commitment.
A lot of older school directors, Spielberg's like that a bit. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of directors in the 70s and 80s were, but the more a director's name becomes a brand now, the thing you're selling the film on, the more I think the audience expects a certain type of film. But Alan Parker, incredibly versatile and a really big figure in the British film industry as well. He was a cartoonist, you remember? He did these really funny little cartoons about the industry that they used to publish in Screen International every week. So he was a really funny, brilliant drawer. And, you know, with Putnam, he was a big, big, big figure in the British film industry, responsible for revitalizing it in the 80s, along with lots of other commercials directors, and storming Hollywood in the 80s.
This is all shot in Pinewood, wasn't it? I mean, when yes. I remember watching it as a kid. Well, and Joe, when did you watch it first?
Well, when it came out. And it was quite a controversial thing in my house because my mum and dad wouldn't let my sister see it. We were all about exactly the right age. 76 it was, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we were eight. 68. Yeah, eight. We were 8 years old, seven, 8 years old. And my sister was quite wayward and impressionable. And my parents decided that they'd maybe seen a clip on Barry Norman or something, and they decided that the sort of vampish, coquettish nature of Jodie Foster's character, Tallulah, would be a bad influence on my sister. So me and my brother were allowed to see it, but my sister wasn't, which to this day strikes me as weird. But then, you know, I guess, I don't know. Anyway, that's what happened. So it sticks in the memory because of that. And if you were that age and movie going was a new thing to you, then you can imagine this, Helen. That movie was just like nothing you'd ever seen before. Mm. The fact that it was you on screen and all the props were to scale and the entire world was to scale. And, you know, the stools in the diner and the costumes and the props and the guns and the phones. And there was something thrilling about seeing children doing menial jobs as well. Yeah. Because as a child, you're all supposed to be equal, aren't you? And that's what's so sort of frustrating and chaotic about life. In the eyes of adults, you're all equal and you're just a ball of potential. And what you'll be in life is a mystery. And you go to the cinema and you see, oh, he's a janitor. Oh, and that guy's a waiter. And oh, he's a butler. And that guy works in a manhole. And you say, oh, I'd love to work in a manhole. Do you know what I mean? Then I'd know who I was and where I went to work. And just the idea that they had homes and, like, where are the adults? There are no adults. It was pretty mind-blowing. And then add to that just the toys in it, the pedal cars yes. and the splurge guns and the stuff. Oh, the you know, this guns. Is pre-Star Wars as well. So there wasn't a lot of fantasy cinema aimed directly at young people. There was Disney stuff that tended to be very... You know, nothing like Bugsy Malone. But so it was a really, really high impact thing. And then also, it's such a violent genre to choose, right? The gangster movie. It's got weapons. And if you replaced bullets for the splurge in Bugsy Malone, it would be more violent than Michael Cimino's Year of the Dragon. There are massacres, like gangs walking into speakeasies and just killing everybody. People slammed up against the wall, a guy shot in the head.
They kill all the reporters at the end.
Killing all the children.
Yeah. And it actually has splatter in it. You know the term splatter that you use for gore movies, which is about blood? It has splatter. It's just custard, not blood. So I think it's absolutely brilliant. And it was brilliant when I watched it this afternoon. And the other thing is it's such an amazingly clever combination of genres. It's a musical... It's slapstick, and these are all big, big genres in early cinema. Gangster movies, slapstick movies, musicals, and there was one other one. Child movies, like The Little Rascals and Chaplin's the Kid and stuff like that. So it takes these four massive historical movie genres and squishes them together and turns them into something completely new. So you're wrong, Helen. You're wrong.
You haven't even heard what Helen said yet. She might be... going gangbusters
well,
on it.
Well, I'm just trying to preempt it.
I think all films could be improved with a giant pie fight at the end, so...
Yes. Sorry, Helen. I don't mean to...
But
it's fine.
Joe very much brought back memories there of what was exciting about it, all the gear and the gadgets, and it was fun. I saw that Scott Bio, talking about the movie, said that it was great fun to shoot. And that for at least the first few weeks, they all just had a hoot, all these children running around the set on Pinewood. In between takes, they would find a pedal car and jump in it and cycle around as you would. The splurge guns were pretty fun, although the splurge guns apparently started out having wax pellets that were fired under high pressure, and they were quite dangerous and painful. So they changed them to ping pong balls, and then they would cut... to a whipped cream impact.
Oh,
but
okay.
Then I was always... That was one thing I do remember being a little confused about as a youngster watching it for the first time. Like, the rules of logic for splurge. as opposed to cream pie. Like, splurge appears to be lethal, and I looked up what actually there is in splurge. It contains, and now it makes sense, it contains whipped cream, very sugary, dog shit, Sunny Delight, and anthrax. So that's why it kills you, and that's why they're using it. Anyway, the other weapon used, that's a joke, I wrote that joke. That's as well as...
Sunny Delight wasn't around in 1927.
I know, I was screwing around with the timeline.
Was it the white dog shit as well? Is that what you're thinking there?
Yeah, it's 80s white dog shit, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And then they also have custard pies or just cream pies. Cream pies, non-lethal. So those can be lobbed around with gay abandon and people will survive them. And then by the end, with the big fight in the speakeasy, and you give a little love and it all comes back to you, there's no rules.
La, 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 la.
Yeah, some people are getting hit by splurge. And, yeah, they're all fine.
But there's that one guy who got hit by multiple custard pies by Dandy Dan's gang. His gang, he's the one that dropped the gun. He doesn't get the flour. Where's my flour, boss?
Knuckles or noodles, maybe? The other reason that it holds a special place in my heart and I think in Joe's heart is that Joe suggested we do a production of Bugsy Malone 10 years after it was released at school, when we were at school in the 80s. And we were collaborating for the first time on short films and plays and things like that. And so we put on Bugsy Malone. And Joe, I remember Joe suggesting it and... thinking, I had a tendency to be quite skeptical a lot of the time and just to find, like, well, the reasons that we couldn't do things. And so Joe was very good at just saying, no, it'll be fine. We'll do it and we'll fix all those problems. But I couldn't get my head around, like, how are you going to do a production of this as a school play that isn't totally lame? Because one of the most important aspects, okay, so you can have splurge guns, we'll figure something out, you know, the pedal cars, you can kind of fudge all those things. But the thing that I thought would make the production completely impractical was the music. Because really, for me, the backbone of the film, the thing that tips it over into being a success rather than just a curiosity, is that music. The score by Paul Williams and those songs, which are like an album, you know, it's my favorite type of musical songs. I don't like musical songs that are all like stage musicals where there's no discernible tune and people are just kind of sing talking or something. They're actual songs. It sounds like an album by a good band, as far as I'm concerned. And I thought, how are we going to do justice to those? But it was an incredible success and we absolutely smashed it.
When I invited you guys onto FlixWatcher, I gave you the choice of, because I know you're busy guys and sometimes it's a bit of homework to come on the show. So I gave you the choice between Alien and Bugsy Malone because they were two of the films that featured prominently in your book, Adam. And so it was interesting to, I knew the story that you just said there. I know who you played, but can you tell everyone who you played as?
I was cast, because the backstory is that we had already done a play by that time, me and Joe. And we put on a play called Private Wars about three Vietnam vets recuperating in an army hospital. And we had to play these American Vietnam vets as little posh 16-year-old boys. But that had gone well. And I thought, like, oh, I think I'm really quite a talented actor. And I might be like Robert De Niro. So when Joe said we're going to do Bugsy Malone, I was thinking... well, I'll probably be Bugsy because I'm the main guy. And Joe said, no, our friend Ben Walden's going to be Bugsy. You're going to be Fat Sam. And I was a little bit self-conscious about my body at that time and have been on and off throughout my life. And I just thought, you are Fat Sam shaming me with this casting and I don't appreciate it. I got into a bit of a sulk about it for a while. But then Joe pointed out to me that actually... it's kind of the funniest part in the film, so, and the play.
That sounds amazing. Did he get a song, though?
He gets, well, we screwed around with who gets to sing the songs a little bit.
Right.
So he gets Fat Sam's Grand Slam, Speakeasy. And actually, because we were worried about the standard of singing from our cast, myself, Joe, and our friend Ben would sing the songs because we thought we were so great at singing. Actually, Joe is a good singer, and I'm okay on occasion. And we would stand behind the curtain when the play was happening, and we'd kind of sing backup vocals to beef up the performance for the rest of the cast.
But weirdly, that reflects the movie itself, where as soon as the kids' mouths open, adult voices come out, which I didn't remember at all, actually. And watching the film, it doesn't... It's very strange, but weirdly, it had never struck me before that that was the case. It certainly never bothered me. And I was watching one of those behind-the-scenes things on YouTube, and Scott Baio talks about how weird it is during the So You Want to Be a Boxer song. Like, he's got these lines in the middle of the song, which he says like this. And then, but then when he sings, he's back like this. Mm. And it just totally worked for me as a kid. It somehow fitted the idiom or the suspension of disbelief. It just, okay, they're pretending to be adults. So when they sing, they sound like adults. It sort of made sense. And plus, it's Paul Williams's voice a lot of the time, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, is it? Okay.
And he's got a sort... I mean, he's quite a sort of childlike guy anyway, if you've seen him. He's in Baby Driver, right? He plays the arms dealer in Baby Driver. And he's on screen in a Brian De Palma movie called Phantom of the Paradise. So he does a bunch of acting as well as being an incredible composer and singer and musician. And his voice is quite sort of Muppety, isn't it? Quite sort of, childish sounding.
Yes, he looks a little bit as if he's just come out of the Dark Crystal. In the nicest part, like a very handsome guy from the Dark Crystal.
Hatched out of it.
No, from the film.
Do you think, though, the songs would have stood up if it was the children's voices?
No.
I don't think it would have resonated for me.
Buxton, I'm saying no.
Well, if they were really good singers,
yeah,
then
but,
yeah.
Because look, let's face it. I think people who are worried about the standard of the acting have a point, right? And I've already said that it doesn't bother me because it feels like it reinforces the kind of inclusivity for a child viewer. Mm. But those songs are really good. The fact that the songs are so good, that really kind of is an important sheen of goodness that the film really needs.
I just think it's, you don't go into Bugsy Malone thinking you're going to get an acting tour de force. You don't go into Star Wars thinking you're going to get an acting tour de force. Like, if you get a good emotional moment between a space pirate and a made up bonkers space rock princess, then you're lucky, aren't you? You're not going into films. There's so many other things you're there for, I think.
Yeah, but
I think Scott Baio's really good, and I think Jodie Foster's, you know, it's the same year as Taxi Driver. She basically came from Taxi Driver, flew over, and made Bugsy Malone, and she's very, very good. The kid that plays Fat Shame Sam, he's pretty good. A lot of them are just playing themselves, right? They're like
Brooklyn kids. Stop it. Stop that.
That standout performance for me, apart from Jodie Foster, was Babyface, who I later found out is Dexter Fletcher. I was like, this kid's going to go far, and he did.
That's right. Whose character was played by TV documentarian Louis Theroux in our production.
Oh, really?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, Louis played a number of parts. Looney Bogosi and Babyface are two of them.
He was supposed to be Dandy Dan, but then he dropped out about 3 weeks before we were supposed to actually do the production. It was a big deal because...
Big hoo-ha.
He was leaving it. We had to recast. He had to... Oh, it was we've only barely forgiven
There
him.
Were stories about it in Variety at the time.
It was a big story in Variety.
School play.
I was going to say, I'm sorry, but I don't agree with you about the acting skills of Fat Sam. Played by...
Listen, that dude is genuinely in the mob now, so you're going to get rubbed out.
John Cassese, yeah. Cast by Alan Parker when he visited a school in Brooklyn and asked, he went into a classroom and said, okay, who's the most disruptive pupil in the class? And everyone pointed at this guy at the back, John Cassese. And he kind of put up his hands with a kind of, okay, you got me. Yeah, that's me. And so they cast him. Anyway, I think he's not good as an actor. And it's sort of jarringly bad the way that he delivers some of his lines, especially as he has to deliver a lot of lines with, he's in a lot of scenes with Jodie Foster, who is effortlessly brilliant. And so it really kind of shows up his limitations.
This is like someone who's played Hamlet slagging off someone else who played Hamlet.
That's right.
And it's the sort of thing that professional actors just don't do. And you're doing it.
Yeah, but I feel it's okay to slag off Cassisi because afterwards, in his later life, he did a little more acting, but then he became the director of global construction for a company called Citigroup, and he got busted for bribery, and he was found guilty in 2012, sentenced to 2 to 6 years in prison. Hey, Fat Sam! That must have been hard time in prison. Or listen, do you think he got respect for being Fat Sam?
Of course, to me, that makes him an even better bit of casting. I'll tell you who
Method
Louis...
Acting.
Exactly. He was being himself, which was precisely my point. Louis played Roxy Robinson. Okay. If it was raining brains, people said Roxy Robinson wouldn't even get wet, right? Isn't that the opening
the
line of the film?
He's the first guy to get killed, isn't he?
Yeah, the first guy to get
Someone
splurged.
Called Pickett, Looney, Bogosi, and Shady.
Right.
You've obviously worked, Joe, with a lot of child actors. How does that compare to adult actors? And that gives you a bit more insight compared to what Adam's talking about with maybe what makes a good actor.
Yeah, I might be a bit more generous towards it because of that. I don't know. I've never had to deal with like every single actor. Well, that's not true. Like not 200. Like had something like 200 kids. Like even the background extras are all children. Never had to deal with that. But no, I think it's all about like the tone and spirit, really. And I think it completely works. And I think all the different levels of acting are really good. And there is something weird about like it's just really something pleasurable about the waiter. In the background of a scene, it'll be this gangly 14-year-old kid with his hair scraped back, holding a silver tray. And you'll think, oh, I know a guy at my school that's like that. And yeah, he's just like a waiter. I bet he'll end up being a waiter. You know, there's so much else going on other than the quality of the acting that, frankly, anybody who's criticised it would be an idiot. I'm getting at you, Adam.
It's all about the songs, for me, generally. And also, I mean, I saw it as... randomly, I think it must have been like a rainy day at school, and they just thought, let's wheel out. You know, schools used to have the TV on the wheels.
Yeah, man.
And they pulled it out, and suddenly there was this Bugsy Malone. I must have been like 8 or so, and I was just like, what is this? And it was the car bikes, it was the splurge guns, it was the singing, the dancing, and the fact they were adults with mustaches and stuff. And I just thought, what, this is the best thing ever. And I thought this was like. You know, when they sometimes used to do public announcement TV shows, I thought it was one of those initially they're going to bring out, but it was like the best thing ever. And I've loved it since then through till now. And I'm super surprised.
You thought there was going to be like an educational message.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's what happens when they bring out the TV on the wheels. The trolley TV is all about educational messages, how to cross the road. You know, don't talk to strangers. And this was, no, you can shoot people in the face with splurge guns. And I was like, where can we get splurge guns from? Is it something that can happen? And I'd like to get that as soon as possible.
Yeah, I wanted a splurge gun. But you're right. For me, it comes back to the music and how instantly catchy it was. And when you think about the soundtrack, like in my mind, a good album has three songs you really like. It has to have at least three songs you really like, hopefully more. And the rest of them are maybe okay. But it's like, if it's got three or four songs that you really love, that's a great album. The Bugsy Malone soundtrack has about five or six really great songs. You know, Fat Sam's Grand Slam, that's great. Bad Guys, amazing. My Name is Tallulah, very good. So You Want to Be a Boxer, amazing. And then You Give a Little Love is one of the best songs ever. And a kind of, you know, probably a bit of an unfashionable message in 2021. Unity and things like that. Also, you'd be unwise to... you know, if you give a little love, the chances are there'll be an algorithm tracking where the love goes, and then you will slowly become radicalized by it. So you've got to be careful where you put your love. But what an amazing song. And it still brings a lump to my throat whenever I hear it.
We had it, my wife and I played it at our wedding. I can't remember when in the wedding. I think it's during when the party's kind of fading at the end. But we had a big old sing-along with people there.
Do you think it would work as an anti-gang strategy? Like if you got genuine gangs together?
Like just say no for drugs?
Yeah, and got them all to sing that song and hug each other. it would probably end all.
I'd love
violence.
That, man. You, like some big drill gangs and stuff, and they do. You give a little love, and it all comes
and
back to you.
They shoot each other at
You're
the
gonna
end.
You're going to be remembered for the things that you say and do. Yeah.
With splurge.
With splurge.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't. Today we're recording, it's the inauguration, and I presume that Joe Biden's putting that in his manifesto at the top end. I'm sure, yeah, everyone, you give a little love is the first thing they're going to do tomorrow.
Change the new national United anthem States. To that.
Yeah. Change the
I'm sure Lady Gaga and Garth Brooks and Elton John are doing a.
Are they the
are singing that? It's everybody, isn't it? Tom Hanks is spinning plates and. Justin Timberlake's doing the washing up.
He's good at that.
Barbara Streisand's knitting hats for everybody.
Meanwhile, the lady that played Blousy Brown in Bugsy Malone, Flory Duggar, I did some research about her. She stopped acting. She became a medical administrator. She served in the Air Force at various bases in the UK, South Korea and the United States. Left the military in 2001. Recently assaulted the Capitol building sporting a tattoo of Donald Trump's face on her face.
That's not true, that bit at the end, is it?
The last That's bit not is true. Not, the tattoo yeah. bit's not true.
For legal reasons.
The rest of it's true.
Is there anything you guys want to say before we head to the scores? Helen?
But I want to know what, Helen, because Helen, I thought you said that you thought that you were surprised Alan Parker got to make another film after this, which I took as meaning you really didn't like it. Is that, am I right?
Well, it was actually a flop, wasn't it, in America? It didn't really make much money. So for them
sidestepping the question there.
Americans don't really know it, in fact. It's really? Unusual for Americans to know it. It was a big, big hit in the UK, but yeah, not in the US.
It seems from sort of gathering people's experience of watching it that it was quite a thing to be shown in schools. Obviously not my school or any of the lessons that I was in, but for somehow it became like a school film and then, you know, school productions like yourselves, and that never happened either. So all I can say is our school did not do Bugsy Malone or any of my childhood film experiences came to that. So I'll expand a bit on the score, but it was a very, very, very bizarre watch for me.
I saw a production quite recently of the Lyric Hammersmith, and it was brilliant. But a sign of the times, health and safety laws are obviously so strict that they really couldn't do the splurge. Even when they spilt water, someone came on with a mop and immediately mopped it up, and then someone else with a sort of duster to mop up any residue. And then the big splurge fight at the end was reduced to about three or four shots, which were then immediately cleaned up. Because they didn't want anyone slipping over and hurting themselves. It was really odd. So it is really a film of its time. And
that was half
I know.
The fun.
Well, I mean, I remember somebody on the last night of our production, deliberately, when my mouth was wide open, singing, "You give a little love," splurged me right in the mouth and nearly suffocating, having so much. Because we didn't use whipped cream, did we? We used some sort of horrible, probably now illegal, synthetic foam thing. And I had a gobble.
Yeah, we attached these spray cans of weird sort of expanding foam to the guns that we made, and we were just going nuts. Like, we'd been told by the teachers, because this is we did it more or less ourselves. We had some help from some of the groovy teachers, but this was Joe's masterpiece idea to, like, let's do this. And I kind of helped out and did acting and bits and pieces. But we were really doing it ourselves, and the teachers said, be careful with this splurge stuff. Like, you're doing it in the Great Hall, so don't, you're not allowed to get it on the kind of 500-year-old carvings up in the corner that Queen Elizabeth I did herself. I don't know. Victoria. I'm making up queens. And we just, yeah, we went nuts, and we were sliding around. We sprayed everything. There's probably still splurge stains in the Great Hall at Westminster.
Can I say
still.
One more? Can I ask one more question? When Tallulah, during her song "My Name Is Tallulah," do you remember the bit where she leans against the wall and sort of stretches her arms up, and she sings, "No one, something like no one south of Texas is going to treat you finer. Tallulah got her training in North Carolina."
No, south of heaven.
Right, no one south of heaven's going to treat you finer. Tallulah got her training in North Carolina. She sings that twice. What does that mean?
What happens in North Carolina?
What are they training you to do?
Helen, what did you take from that?
I can't remember the lyrics that much.
Tallulah had a training in North Carolina.
I was reading, though, that Jodie Foster was really upset with what they did to her hair. Apparently they told her it was going to be a light rinse and they bleached her hair, and she was quite upset by it all. But she's great.
That's the only bit that... The only bit that is weird for me now, watching it back.
The Tallulah bit.
Yeah, that feels like a little bit 1976.
Mm. Yeah, wouldn't have that. You wouldn't do that now, would you?
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't do the whole thing now.
I mean, there's
all sorts
because
of things.
Because I'm surprised, because it could have been a franchise. They could have done a big sci-fi movie. They could have done like a stalk and slash horror movie. They could have had all kinds of different genres with all kid casts. Could have been a big money spin.
Good idea.
The one thing I would have done that they didn't do is had everyone smoke. It being 1976. Like, they do everything else. They do romance, guns,
they do the drinking.
All the taboos. They drink, yeah, but I would have liked to have seen those kids smoking.
And swearing heavily as well, like really obscene.
Nothing stopped remakes of films with all kids now. You could make some classic remakes, some current films, all with kids.
Yeah.
It's a possibility.
There's a couple of music videos that riff on it, right? Edgar Wright did a brilliant Blue Tones video, which riffs on Bugsy Malone. And then the Spike Jones Sky's the Limit video for Notorious B.I.G. is very Bugsy Malone. Equally inappropriate in places. So it has had some cultural influence.
Yeah, in the States. Oh, well, I don't know. I'm surprised it wasn't that big. Because when Scott Baio was in it, where was he in Happy Days at that point?
He hadn't joined the cast. Okay. He joined the Happy Days cast in 77.
He's now very right-wing, isn't he, Scott Baio?
Yeah.
Is he?
So he's probably quite sad today.
I was interested to find out that he and Jodie Foster got on very well. And according to him, they had a snog in the Holiday Inn in Slough.
Really?
And actually, funnily enough, me and Joe had full sexual intercourse there.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Yes. It's a very sexy hotel.
Before we go to scores, guys... one of the things I love most about your show, The Adam and Joe Show, which is available on More4 as we speak, the toy spoofs.
I would say, can I just jump in and say, don't worry about More4. I would direct you to Wow Presents Plus. If you type that in, you will find the properly uploaded, and actually I haven't watched them, but I'm hoping that they've done a nice job of uploading them from the masters. But it's the production company that... we made the show for World of Wonder, and they've uploaded all four series to Wow.
Go to Wow Presents Plus, guys, and watch the Adam and Joe show there. But the toy spoofs you guys did was one of my favorite parts of your show each week. In the past 20 years, have you thought of films that you think that I could do a great toy version of that one?
Yeah, all of them, really.
Well,
it's Adam.
Yeah, the other day I was watching. TV and Goodwill Hunting came on, and I thought, why didn't we do this? This is just absolutely perfect. And I can't remember why, because the timing was about right. I think Goodwill Hunting came out mid-90s or something, just before we started doing the Adam and Joe show. But I really, I had to resist the temptation to just do it myself, and... It's because it is ridiculous. What you want, I think, is a film with big, stupid kind of Oscar-winning beats, you know what I mean? And ridiculous concertinaed dramatic scenes. So in Goodwill Hunting, it's, he's so screwed up and he's got a big mental breakdown narrative and he can't relate to other people. And then Robin Williams just sorts it out in 5 minutes by shouting at him.
I would have done Toy Story, but with people. Flip the script, you know?
People story.
Mm-hmm. People story. I love it. Kobe, that's a good idea. Listen, once this is over, let's stay on this link and
Right. Yeah, we'll talk. I've already got an outline in my head. I'll send it over to you.
Good. 50-50, yeah?
Yeah, nice. Yeah. And with that, let's head to the scores.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have come from the worlds of film, television, music, food, comedy, and podcasting. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we'll start with you, please, Adam, with your recommendability score.
This is tough because I have recommended the film in the past, but I don't recall anyone actually coming back and saying they loved it. And I tried watching it with my children. It was one of the two films that I was most excited about watching with my children when they were old enough. The other one being Star Wars, and they just didn't get it.
Oh, no.
So I don't know. Out of 5, I'm going to go for 3.
Oh, Joe.
5. 5 across the board. 5, 5, 5, 5, 5. I think it's great.
Let's get to them.
Oh, sorry, mate.
Helen, recommendability, Helen.
I'm going to go for a 3. I feel I missed the boat with this one. And I think what I was most disappointed about was missold the amount of Jodie Foster, because she's not actually in it and she doesn't make an appearance until about 30 odd minutes in, and that for me was a bit disappointing. I mean, this film is weird. To come watching it as an adult now, it was a very, very, very strange experience. But I am glad I've watched it, so thank you for making me watch Book of the Malone.
I'm going to go for 4.75 here. I think it's a hard sell for older people. I think if you're above 20, above 15 even, they probably just think you're weird. Adam, how old were your kids when you showed it to them?
I mean, I think they were the right sort of age, you know, 12 or 13 or something like that. But they're quite thick, so it probably went over their heads.
Repeat viewing score, Adam.
Repeat viewing. Well, I mean, for the first 20 years or so after I saw it, I repeat viewed it quite a few times and really enjoyed it. Haven't really rewatched it that many times in the last 20 years. But, I mean, 4.5.
Joe,
5
again?
Yep, 5.
Helen?
So if I watched it again, I would need to borrow some children. And I was thinking that maybe borrowing, as I've done some notes, some children between the ages of 8 and 11. But if you said your kids were around that age and didn't enjoy it, maybe I need to...
Your kids will be nice and sparky and open-minded. I just think it made me dislike my children, actually, when they didn't like it. I just thought, what the hell? What am I supposed to do for you? This is like,
oh, no.
It doesn't get any better than this, you stupid morons. Now get out.
I hope they listened to this.
Did they cry?
Yeah, they were crying. It ruined the whole day. They were like, what's wrong with you, Daddy? Why are you shouting? Shut up! Get out!
Are kids harder to please with films now, do you think? Do you think that's what it is? Or
yeah, that was the same night, I think, that my son suggested we watched Return of the Sith, Revenge of the Sith. He was like, oh, that's the best Star Wars movie. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. You're a moron.
Repeat viewing score, Helen.
Unlikely, but if I can borrow some children, then yeah, I would. I think I'd need to watch it either with company or with some children. So I'm going to go for 2.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 5 here. I'm looking forward to my son Milo watching it. He's currently 9 months old, so I'll try.
How young are you going to start him?
Probably about 4 years, in about 4 years' time. And I think that's because The Princess Bride, I thought kind of, I wish I'd watched it as a kid, and look forward to showing it to Milo. And I look forward to showing The Kid Who Would Be King to Milo, actually. Although that's got some scary bits, Joe.
How old is he?
What kind of feedback have you had from parents? He's, well, 9 months.
he's too sophisticated. he's past it. No, that film usually works really well between sort of, if you're quite a tough 7 or 8 year old, it's fine. And then up to, you know, above that. If you're a easily scared 7 or 8 year old, then it's a bit much for you.
Yeah.
One kid ran screaming from the cinema during a test screening in America. Ooh. But only one.
Whoa. A snowflake.
Must have been a snowflake.
Small screen score, Adam.
Small screen score. Oh, it works fine on the tiniest screen. You could watch it on a postage stamp and it would still be terrific. Because you got that music coming into your ears.
So small screen, big speakers.
Yeah, 5.
Joe.
5. What? Yeah, 5. Definitely 5. Bugsy Malone, for God's sake.
Helen.
So I had to watch this on a laptop with headphones and I didn't really enjoy that. It was a bit too much in my ears. what I did see was that Secret Cinema did it way, way, way back. And I think maybe I would enjoy some kind of immersive screening experience. With pies. I think the thing that really stuck with me was fighting with pies. And so I think for that, it is fine on a big screen, on a small screen, home viewing. But I think for me, I would probably have enjoyed it more had it been with company or perhaps in some kind of pie-related interactive thing. So I'm going to give it a 4.
I'm going to go 4.9 here because I would like to see it in when the Prince Charles reopens and they do the sing-along screenings. I'd like to go and see it then with other people. But otherwise, it would work absolutely fantastic.
Do those have pies?
I'm sure, well, if you go and watch The Room there, people throw spoons.
There's pie shops nearby.
Yep.
There's a Patisserie Valerie on the corner. At least there used to be before the end times.
engagement score, Adam.
Engagement score... I'm going to go, I'm gradually nudging up. I'm going to say 5. I was engaged. Yes. It's a good length. Mm. It's not over 90 minutes. And that, to me, is half the battle won already.
You should, are you aware of I know Joe's been on this podcast, the 90 Minutes or Less Film Fest. It sounds like a perfect podcast for you to join.
Yeah, anything over 90 minutes is a grotesque waste of everybody's time.
Do you want my score? I'm ready when you are.
Yes, please. Is it 5?
It's 5. 5. I can tell you later if you want, but I am ready now. 5.
Helen.
I've thought about it.
Yeah, I wasn't massively engaged, and I did do a fair... I really enjoyed reading all of the trivia and all of the strange, weird things that the kids got up to while they were filming it. In fact... I think I would probably have enjoyed watching kind of a making of more than the actual film. 3, sorry.
Yeah, and I'm going to go for 5. And that gives us an overall score of 4.32188. Decent. Very
good. Pretty high.
Yes, absolutely.
Even with my low scores.
What do you do with these very scientific scores?
We have a scoreboard. So if you go to flixwatcher.tv/scoreboard, we have a list which you can sort by score.
What's at number 1?
Ricky Gervais's film debut.
What was that?
Number
the one
about
the ghost
world, was it?
Ghost
Town. Ghost Ricky.
non PC ghost.
Yeah. Number 1 is currently When Harry Met Sally and
God.
Harrison Ford one.
What?
The Fugitive.
Yeah.
Oh Jesus.
They're joint number 1 at the moment.
So you're just
It's how the scores work. You can filter, you can actually go on the website and filter by, it's very
fancy. Good. That sounds good. You can filter out the sort of, that's good. That sounds good. I'm glad you can filter it out because When Harry Met Sally is not the best film.
Is it?
Yeah, there's it's good. Don't get me wrong. And really popular. But I really don't think it's the best of them all.
We are a little bit restricted in that they're on Netflix.
Personally, I don't think it's in the running. Oh, okay. The best one. I don't think it's the best one that's on Netflix. Rocks is really good. Have you watched Rocks?
It is amazing.
It is amazing.
Someone wants to come
on. Have you seen that, Adam?
Rocks.
No, that's on my list. I want to see that one.
Yeah.
That's
good. I just saw, what have I seen recently that's good? Gunda. Have you seen that? About the pig on the farm.
It's supposed to be great, yeah.
It's just under 90 minutes, and there's no voiceover or anything. It's like a nature documentary art film, and it's beautiful and moving and says a lot about life, pigs. About love, about pigs, about horses, about the techniques that horses use to keep the flies away from their noses. Basically, they 69. And it's the cows that do it. So they stand end to end They swish the flies out of the other cow's nose. Yeah, it's quite good.
Five.
And the other thing I saw, another documentary, Carmine Street Guitars. So beautiful, relaxing for a man of a certain age. It was just, it's glorious. About a bespoke guitar shop in New York, and they make these beautiful guitars, artisan guitars, and music people come in and play on the guitars and tell stories and sing
songs.
Does
anyone fake an orgasm? And does someone else say, I'll have what she's had?
Yes, I did while I was watching it.
Good.
We're just going to head to Twitter before we leave, guys, and do follow us, anyone who's listening. We are at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and the main reason to follow us is because we put a little shout out before we record, and in this case put the little tweet saying we're reviewing Bugsy Malone with Adam and Joe. Have you seen it? Give us your thoughts and your score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout out on FlixWatcher. And also, this is probably the first episode since we joined Letterboxd, which we are at FlixWatcher. Are you guys on Letterboxd at all, Adam, Joe? Do you track your films you watch and tell
the
world?
I look at it. I'm not registered to it, but I look at it. It's really comprehensive, isn't it? Pretty much every film ever made, you'll find some opinions on. It was a really useful resource.
I don't really do any social media anymore. Very seldom look at it.
I joined because I can't remember what I watched last week, let alone in the year, and it was quite useful to start logging.
And it's good if you like a particular film. They're quite intelligent people on it. Who write quite articulately. Well, comparatively speaking, compared to IMDb,
like IMDb
for instance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you people group movies. So like if you want to look at really good like Teen Rebellion films or something, you can find amazing lists, really comprehensive lists.
One of our friends has got a list on there which is films in which a helicopter explodes.
All of them. That happens in all films,
all the best
doesn't
ones.
Either it happens,
it happens
on
when
screen
Harry
or
after the orgasm scene, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Will Hunting.
That happens behind
helicopter.
The building, and when Harry met Sally, you can just dimly hear it.
whilst she's faking an orgasm.
Have you guys got Twitter up by any chance?
Yes,
we've got quite a few responses, and if you just read out a few of your favourite ones, and Helen as well, and I don't know if Joe, you've got some.
I do.
Fantastic. Do you want to pick one, Adam?
Gwen Weir says, I remember seeing it with my man and my younger brother. She has a man. She's just got a man that she has. And when we came out of the cinema, my brother said, well, that was a waste of cream cakes.
No score.
Her brother's a smart ass.
Yeah. He does have a very smart ass.
He's got a little shirt and tie on the back of his trousers. Chris Olden says, I watched it relentlessly as a kid. It was a world I wanted to live in. The cars, the splat guns, babyface, green stuff, bracket, not cabbages. What is that a reference to? The songs are still amazing. 5. Chris Olden's a man after my own heart. What's he referring to when he says green stuff, brackets, not cabbages? Was he smoking weed while he watched it? The sarsaparilla.
Cabbages. That just makes me think of Cracker Jack when they played that game where you had to hold
balance
as many items as you could.
Yeah, but he says not cabbages.
Yeah, well, I'm just telling you what's in my head.
Never do that.
Sorry.
Dangerous.
Helen?
I'll go for the one from Retro Ramble Podcast. Very fond memories watching it growing up. Such a unique, crazy concept when you think about it. Great songs, especially You Give a Little Love for the finale. And he's done 4 jazz hands for that one.
Adam?
Gareth Dimolo says, I love Bugsy Malone despite Scott Baio turning into a Trump-supporting nut job. Jodie Foster is spectacular and the songs still splurge. Bad guys forever. Yes, Gareth. I agree with you in part.
How does he spell forever? Does he use the number four and E-V-A?
Oh, he uses the formal spelling.
Good.
And he gives it 4 stars.
Good, good.
Joe?
Well, I'm going to read this tweet by Overthrowing Education Podcast. It says, I watched it many times as a kid. Brackets, I was their age when it came out. Close brackets. As an adult, I understood the genius of director Alan Parker even more. I showed it to my class as a fun precursor to The Great Gatsby to discuss the 20s. Yes, using Bugsy Malone not only as an amazing, bizarre, fun confection, but as an educational tool to discuss the 20s.
Mm. See? TV trolley.
What a movie.
The TV trolley is an educational...
Five. Those are the correct scores.
Helen?
I'll go. This one is from Alex Flowers. Watched this in primary school and it established my hatred of musicals for life. And then with the emojis, he's gone, was one jazz hand and a middle finger out of 5.
Oh, mate.
Unpleasant.
Come over
person.
Here. Come over Gosh. Here. I'm going to give you a hug. All right.
I'm going to splurge Come him on. Full in the face at point blank pie range.
Hug. Huggy hug.
I was going to read out one that's been quote tweeted, which means it goes into a different part of the Twitter sphere. This is from Jen Offord at Aspire Jen. This is actually my favourite film, brackets, Kindergarten Cop is a close second, obviously. Ooh. A massive 5 stars for the early detective work of PC Dave Quinnan, the Bill. Massive 5 stars with PC Dave Quinnan alone. I remember him. He had quite a big chin.
Mm. I could sing you the theme, but I don't know who PC Dave Quinnan is.
That's the Bill, right? PC Big Nose.
Here is, can I go off topic or off message or off site and read you a review from someone on IMDb? This is a bit of a negative one. This is from Snaunton, and you might agree with this, Helen. The detail of the plot lacks the originality of the concept. The film is too dull, and too many voices are squeaky and speak too fast, with the unmodulated expression of pubescence. A worthy try. Essential to watch, but in the end, a bit disappointing.
That's
mixed,
Sewell?
Isn't it? He's saying it's essential, but it's disappointing.
Well, my favourite letterbox review for this, because I enjoy reading user reviews, was what the fuck and also why the fuck.
You're picking the negative ones here, guys.
Trying to be balanced. Trying to give the haters a hug and, you know.
Counterbalance the straight fires from Joe.
We're going to give them a little love because it all comes back to you.
And that's how we finish. Can you give us, let the guys know where they can find your podcast and your films, guys? And we'll say goodbye to everyone listening.
I'm going to tell you that you can find Joe's films anywhere that does films. Just type in Joe and films, and there they are.
There you go. And I'm going to tell you, you can find Adam's podcasts on all good podcast platforms, including a Podbot and Castaway and Earfun and
Yak House.
All of them. Yuck House. That's Yuck just made House. Up. Yuck House.
Mumble Mansion.
Mumble Madge. Is that Mumble Madonna's Madge. New podcast platform? Her and what's the woman that makes all the mumblecore films? Who's in Girls? What's she called?
Lena Dunham and Greta Gerwig.
And Madonna have and set Madonna. Up a podcast platform called Mumble Madge. Is that true?
I said Mumble Mansion.
I'm sorry. I misheard.
But they all live in Mumble Mansion.
Guys, thank you so much for joining. It's been great for me. I've certainly enjoyed rewatching Bugsy Malone for the umpteenth time, and I will continue to watch it again. So, cheers. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Helen. Thank you, Kobe. Good to see you all. Cheers, Joe.
See you guys.
Bye. Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you. Thank you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.